Welcome to Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah.
Nō mai, haere mai, kia ora, and welcome to our Books and Beyond Literary Lounge with Alison and Inika. Kia ora, Inika.
Kia ora, Alison.
Look, on today's show, we're going to talk about what we've been reading and what's on our to-be-read list, and then we've got a hot tip to share with you. Now, as many of you will know, earlier this week, we in Aotearoa marked the second anniversary of the Christchurch terror attacks. We've taken some time this week to remember those who were tragically killed at the Masjid al-Noor and the Linwood mosques, and we're remembering their families and friends who lost so many loved ones.
Yeah. With that in mind, I thought I might share a recent read and a couple of other books as well, but the one I'm going to speak to you about first is one I found via a really, really good review by a local bookstagrammer, and she's also an AL, Auckland Libraries library member. So a little shout out to Never Not Reading on Instagram for introducing me to this excellent debut novel, which is called The Beauty of Your Face by Sahar Mustafa. Now, this is a 2020 publication, so nice and new. It only has a physical copy at this stage. The main character of our book, Afaf, is like our author, a Pakistani-American woman. She's born and raised in Chicago. When we first meet her at the start of the book, she's in her dual role. She's principal of the local high school for Muslim girls, and she's wife and mother of three as well. Now, the day starts pretty normally, with sort of school and family admin sort of jostling for position in her mind. But then it takes a sudden turn and erupts into chaos and tragedy. We're suddenly in a tense standoff between Afaf and the gunman who is responsible for killing 15 of her students and teachers during the choir rehearsal, having walked into the school disguised as a maintenance person. Oh. Now, from this shocking opening chapter, we then circle back to the sort of defining event of Afaf's childhood. It's the traumatic disappearance of her older sister, Nada. A little bit like Strange Flowers, the book that I was reading a couple of weeks ago that we talked about.
Oh, yes.
You know, it's the disappearance without warning and without any kind of any follow-up, no way of knowing what exactly has happened, causes a massive strain on the family. And in this family, they already had a kind of estranged relationships going on, but this really means that it starts to disintegrate completely. And particularly the relationship between the children, younger children in the family, and mother is largely lost, particularly with the daughter. She feels this very, very, very deeply. Now, for a host of reasons, Afaf's mother has never really settled into their new life in the States after their move from Pakistan. And when her loneliness and frustration becomes coupled with that grief of losing a child and no resolution of what's happened, she becomes chronically depressed and really quite numbed to the needs of those who have been left behind and to her own needs as well.
Yeah. You know, that thread that you're talking about of the matriarch of the family not really adjusting to life in the new country, that really reminds me of the book Homeland Elegies that I've talked about by Ayad Akhtar, also set in America in that sort of Chicago area. And, you know, it's good to see this aspect of the immigrant experience being represented. I think it's, you're seeing it more and more in literature, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think it's a very important one to remember when we're thinking about people who have come from other countries. You know, it's really tied into those gender roles and those traditional gender roles that can be reinforced when coming to a new country. So you've got a language barrier, you know, and the loneliness of a woman stuck at home who's not really able to make any connections because she's not working outside the home, or she might be afraid to kind of engage with the local community. And it sort of becomes a bit of a vicious circle, really. For Afaf, the kind of split from her mum creates this kind of desperate need for connection, really. She starts looking for support elsewhere. By the time she gets to high school, she's sort of in the bedrooms and the back seats of cars with white boys in her neighbourhood who are sort of looking for a bit of exotic distraction, yeah, without really respecting her story at all and her background. And then later on in the book, you get this sort of late awakening and adoption of Islam. There's a sort of a shift a crux where she realises that actually this is what's been missing from her life. And she joins the local mosque community with her father and really embraces it and embraces the warmth of that community that she has there. Now, this novel is really, really absorbing. You're switching between the events of the one day, the school shooting, and then R5's life journey throughout the book, forward and back. And this is really helps to pull you along because you really want to find out the steps that brought her and her family to this place and this day, and then what's going to happen after that day as well. So as I said, Mustafa is herself a Muslim Pakistani-American woman. And the beauty of your face really rings true. You know, it's a very authentic voice. It explores ties and limitations of the family, different experiences of, you know, an immigrant coming first to a country and that next generation who are both kind of caught in different ways between two worlds with values that are often in conflict with each other. And it also looks at the strength and the comfort that a strong faith and a caring community can bring, particularly when there's a family breakdown that can sort of pick up those pieces. It's quite a simply written book, quite reflective. Not a long book. I think it was, it's a really, really beautiful book.
Yeah, I can't wait to read it.
Awesome. Yeah, I really, really recommend it. I'm really glad that it popped up on my Instagram. So while I'm speaking about our own voice writing from Muslim authors, I'd like to just mention a recently published local non-fiction book that many of you may have heard of. It's called Husna's Story, My Wife, The Christchurch Massacre and My Journey to Forgiveness by Fareed Ahmed, with Kimberly Davis helping to write this. Published last year, and it's available at Auckland Libraries in all the formats, lots to choose from there. It's a combined memoir, love story, and a call for peace and unity. Farid recounts his life journey with his wife Husna, their immigration from Bangladesh to New Zealand, the car accident that left him confined to a wheelchair and paraplegic, and the selfless care and service that Husna gave to her family and to the members of the Muslim community in Christchurch. He also tells the story of the fateful day, March 15, 2019. He notes that Husna had already helped to get a group of women and children out of the mosque into safety, but she was tragically killed when she re-entered the building to go and find her husband, Fareed, who'd actually managed to escape through another exit in the meantime. So really such sad circumstances. You may recall Fareed's speech at the National Remembrance Service that was held 2 weeks after the attacks. He memorably called for unity, peace and forgiveness. And just a little quote from his speech there. I want a heart that is full of love and care and full of mercy and will forgive lavishly because this heart doesn't want any more life to be lost.
Yeah, it was an incredible speech, wasn't it? And, you know, I'm so grateful for this book and I'm so glad that I've read it. Mm. That display of forgiveness by Fareed was astonishing, really, you know, particularly when the attacks and the grief were still so raw.
That's right.
It was so soon after, you know, the atrocity. And his selflessness and generosity, aspects of him that have continued to be so healing for the entire community.
Because he was a senior leader at the Al Noor Mosque, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he's continued his amazing work. And I just can't imagine the loss of his wife, Husna, must have just been unbearable. But, you know, I think it's so good that their story together has been shared, like this, and so brave of him to write the memoir. But this story, what's good about it is that it will become part of our collective memory forever.
That's so true.
Won't it? Yeah, it's such a an amazing piece of work. Their love story, you probably picked this up as well, that was so romantic.
Mm. It's,
they just had a, the most beautiful relationship.
Lovely connection.
Yeah, they were really soulmates. And Husna was an outstanding woman. She was really a truly good human being. You know, and then, of course, she was one of 51 human beings who we lost that day. Now, one thing that I thought I probably should point out to readers is that parts of the book are hard, very hard to read. They're shocking, but it's done very well, and I, you know, I think it is worth reading.
Yeah. Important.
It's important.
Really.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not done in a way that's gratuitous at all.
No.
It's, you know, don't worry about that. And, you know, I really think if there's one book that should be on everyone's to-be-read list, it's this one. And as we said before, it's available in all the formats, so get yourself a copy of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What have you been reading this week, Alison?
Oh, well, I've been raving to you about this earlier. I've been reading the most gorgeous book, and it's also about the search for identity, but it's how we do that through travel. And it's called Around the World in 80 Trains, a 45,000-mile adventure. And I kept wanting to say kilometre. But it's by the British journalist and travel writer Monisha Rajesh. Now, Monisha was born in England in 1982, and she was the child of two Indian doctors, and her Indian heritage becomes relevant as the story unfolds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, train travel, I don't know about you, but I find it fascinating, and it's something that holds this sort of fascination for many people.
Mm.
And, you know, it can have that real romance and mystique, and yet the actual experience of this mode of transport, you know, can range from complete luxury, which I don't think I've experienced yet, one day, but it ranges from that to the sort of dangerous and unhygienic. You know those trains, which you may have caught, that where you try not to use the bathroom or
so
get anywhere
many.
Near it.
What is it about trains' bathrooms that
yes.
means that everything goes haywire?
It sure does, doesn't it? Probably even on some of the nicer ones. I once travelled on a third-class ticket through Thailand on a train. Yeah, it was character-building, I would say, and sort of memorable. I won't forget it.
I bet.
Yeah. I don't know whether the pigs that I was sitting next to on the train survived. They're probably not still around, sadly. But anyway, so getting back to the book. So Monisha Rajesh, she's got a real passion for rail travel, and she's previously written about train travel around India,
mm-hmm.
and that's another book that would be worth looking at. But in this book, even though it says around the world, they basically travel all around the Northern Hemisphere,
mm-hmm.
and her aim in writing the book was to discover whether the romance of the railway still exists. So the journey takes her 7 months.
Wow.
And it's a real feat of endurance. But fortunately, she takes her partner, Jeremy, with her, and they share the ups and downs of the trip. And they catch 80 different trains that are, you know, have distinctly variable comfort, reliability and safety. And this helps them travel the 45,000 miles.
Wow.
And, you know, just the scale of a trip like this would be enough to daunt even the hardiest adventurers among us.
Absolutely.
So they start in London, and they travel with a Ural pass, and they travel ending up in Moscow, where they have some really surreal and kind of nightmarish experiences. And this is where they're first subject to racist profiling, because they are both people of colour.
Mm.
And this is a real shock to them, because they get accused of stealing from the train. The passports get ripped out of their hands, and they're in the night sleeper, and they get woken up. They're the only ones on the train, of course, that get treated like this.
It's and so then frightening, isn't it?
It slowly dawns on them, and they say it's because we're brown, you know. So, terrible experience to have. But anyway, after Russia, they catch the Trans-Mongolian railway to Beijing, which is an 11-day journey. It's just huge distances. Amazing. That we're thinking about. And then they go all through Asia and they learn so much about 20th century history, particularly the horrors of World War II.
Mm. And they train travel featured highly.
Yes,
in their
that's right,
plan
and the railways
infrastructure.
That were built by prisoners of war,
that's
and
right.
So it's a really accessible way of learning a lot about that history. And now Jeremy, the partner, he has quite an uncomfortable time in parts of Asia because he's of Asian heritage, but it's the old story. He finds that he doesn't fit in his homeland because he thinks of himself as a Brit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he likes to go down to the pub on a Friday and have a beer and pie or, you know, that sort of thing. So it's quite uncomfortable. And this is what Monisha had discovered when she'd first visited India and travelled on the trains there.
Mm.
But it must be quite a universal experience for the children of migrants.
Yes.
So, you know, where do I fit in? Now, they do get on a plane at one stage because they go to Vancouver and then they head east across Canada to Toronto, and that's on that amazing trip. It's about 3,000 miles, I think, called the Canadian. And she says that's the most efficient way to absorb the vastness of the world's second largest country in one sitting.
Mm.
So, and they love that and the things they see. And her writing is so good. You really feel as though you're on the journey with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so then after crossing all over the top part of the globe, they finally take the Orient Express in luxury, but which is sort of well-earned, and it takes them sort of almost back to London. But so for Rajesh, the romance of train travel, she says that it certainly does live on. It's in the people, she says. The passengers should always tell their story to strangers, offer advice, share their food and give up their seats. And there's all these sort of unexpected acts of kindness and generosity. And she said there's a real community of people on the trains.
That's awesome.
She makes a wonderful quote. Now, where is it? Oh, she says, trains are rolling libraries of information, and all it takes is to reach out to passengers to bind together their tales.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, that's beautiful.
That is lovely.
So I loved this book. It's observant. It's funny. She's a marvellous travel writer. I felt that I got transported to a range of destinations, which, given that we can't travel at the moment, it's a good way to do it. But the other thing I just wanted to say about it, her travel writing is so good, and it felt really nice to read a travel writer who isn't sort of dripping with white privilege, because I think she brings a really real perspective. So
yeah, and that's a bit of a gap, because it's that's a bit of a trope for travel writing,
for
travel, isn't it?
Yeah,
travel
it is.
Television.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm.
Yes. But great, love it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, it sounds like a real adventure story.
Mm.
And so speaking of adventures, I'm really chomping my way through a real ripper of a yarn right now. Lots of adventure in this one too. Suburban adventure, mainly. It kicks off in Brisbane's rougher working class suburbs in 1983. The book I've been reading is Boy Swallows Universe by Australian author Trent Dalton. Now, this is a 2018 publication. I can't work out whether it was just a slow burn or whether I'm really late to the party, but I only really caught the buzz on this book about 18 months ago, and by the time I actually got round to requesting it, his second novel was out, All Our Shimmering Skies.
Oh.
Well, whatever it was, this one seems to be no secret to most of Auckland libraries. It's 3 years after publication, and the requests for it are still pouring in, but there are loads of copy, and it's in every format that you could want, so Don't hesitate like I did. Just jump in there. And this is a coming-of-age book. It's one of my favourite genres. I love these stories. Our lead, Eli Bell, is 13 years old. He's got a huge heart and big plans. He really wants to make a better life for himself and his family, and he'll do whatever it takes to get that. He also wants to be a crime writer. He's been around crime so much growing up, so he feels he's got lots to add to that. Now, it's told from his perspective. His brother August is 1 year older. He's a talented artist, and he's selectively mute following a traumatic incident in his childhood. But actually, even though he's mute, he's actually extremely eloquent in his own way, and the two brothers understand each other perfectly. Now, they both adore their beautiful but troubled mum, and they really want to protect and provide for her. And most of all, they wanted to stay clear of the drugs, the dealing, and all the deadbeat kind of dads, stepdads, boyfriends that keep turning up at random moments. Now, hiding behind the suburban curtains and shop fronts and the walls of the local prisons of this area, Dalton's managed to create this cast of such memorable characters. You've got a family of Vietnamese heroin importers with a shop front or a restaurant kind of covering the crime, and a teenage bully who's being prepared to take over his mother's throne. There's an artificial limb manufacturer who's got a drug empire running behind that. There's a Polish hard man with a terrifying reputation for torture and dismemberment, mysterious journalist, female journalist, and there's also Slim Halliday, who's an alleged murderer and a local legend for his numerous jailbreaks. Now, Slim's the boy's babysitter and mentor.
I shouldn't. What a community,
right?
Of people.
Completely. He's built an entire universe here.
Yeah.
And he encourages Eli to write every day, and he also matchmakes him to a pen pal in prison who turns out to be the head of a massive gang, motorcycle gang. Now, this one's fairly long. It's over 450 pages, but there's no stopping the train, speaking of trains, once it gets started. It's got a super hooky plot. It's got a cinematic scope, great set pieces, and beautiful writing. It's got lurching between these scenes of real tension and extreme violence, and then it just suddenly takes a little pause and it stops, and you get these really closely observed details of everyday life, very beautifully drawn, and that's part of Eli's view of the world as a writer. He's always looking for the details, and that's something that Slim taught him to do. There's a little hint of magic realism. Well, not really your bag,
no,
I know.
Yeah.
Not sure if it comes out or not because I haven't quite finished the book. It really reminded me of sort of Trainspotting and, you know, the movie Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, that Guy Ritchie movies. But it's got heaps of Aussie humour, lots of heart and soul. It's a massive cliche, but this one literally made me laugh out loud, and it also had me in tears, and that was just in the first few chapters.
Yeah, because at first I was going to ask you whether you thought it was like The Castle, but I guess it's not really, is it?
Look, it's got elements of that. It definitely has that sort of domestic warmth. There's a warmth between the characters that you see in there, but, yeah, quite a different setting, but it's definitely got that kind of, rough and ready humour.
Oh, right.
And, yeah.
Which they do well in Australia.
They really
I mean, I
do.
Think we do it here well as well. Yeah, but yeah. It sounds great.
It's so good. I can't wait to finish it.
Yeah. Now, you were telling me about what's on your TBR list.
Yeah, I thought I'd plug in one more non-fiction read, harking back to our discussion earlier about Muslim writers. The one on my TBR list that I'd really like to get into is It's Not About the Burqa, Muslim Women on Faith, Feminism, Sexuality and Race. This is an anthology of essays edited by Mariam Khan, a British author, and it's been published in 2019, and it's available on Overdrive as well as in our physical collection. Now, Mariam Khan is a British writer and activist. She noticed that in the British press particularly, Muslim women were often being represented as silenced under the thumb of their religion and their men, and really a homogenous view of who they were. So she decided she wanted to change that narrative. So she asked 20 very different Muslim women to speak up for themselves and write essays on topics that were important to them. So we have essays about experiences of racism, rights around wearing or not wearing hijab and burqa, discussions around relationships and sexuality, including what it's like to be queer and Muslim, and the pressure to conform to stereotypes that comes from both within the Muslim culture and also from the outside looking
from
in.
From outside. Yeah, it looks really interesting. And I, when I was looking at the description, I loved the sentence written about one of the contributors. It said, "Too loud, swears too much and goes too far." And I thought, wouldn't that be great as your epitaph?
Right. Yes. You'd be proud to have it.
Yes. Or else I was thinking, if I ever ask you for a reference, will you promise that you'll write that?
Absolutely. I'll do that for you.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So, because books, they're really a mirror, aren't they?
They can be, yeah. They often say that books can be a mirror, a window or a door, you know, providing either a reflection back to the reader or an entry into someone else's world and someone else's perspective. Now, Maryam Khan's really a committed advocate for more diversity in books and publishing, and we're really all about that kaupapa at Auckland Libraries. So we've got a little hot tip for you that ties in with that.
We sure do. So today's hot tip, it's actually a sneak peek at what's coming up on Books and Beyond in a few weeks' time. Can't wait, actually. And we're going to be talking to the Auckland Libraries publishing lead, Anne-Marie Shepherd, about her role. It's a relatively new role, and she's supporting Māori and Pacifica writers to publish their own stories. And these stories will be included in our library collections. And on this show, we'll also be talking to our lovely colleague, author and Pokokiri Whakatā Poko Tā Paenga, senior librarian Terry Ta'ala. And she has written and published her first book for children, and the book title is Mama e Hiakai Ana Mato. Sorry, I didn't make a very good...
No worries, we've got a couple of weeks to practice.
I'm going to have to practice before Terry and Anne-Marie come on the show. So anyway, we both saw the book in the flesh yesterday, didn't we? I was in the distance, but it looks amazing. What an achievement to write a book.
Oh, it's so wonderful. And it's also been, it's a book in Te Reo Māori, and it's also been translated by another colleague of ours, Veronica Lingelinger, into Samoan. So we get two for the, I don't know if it's the price of one, but we've got two beautiful books.
Yes, and what an achievement for both of them.
Absolutely.
So we should have, as well as Terry, we'll have Veronica on the show as well, which
wonderful.
Will be lovely.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to that. So, wow, good for them.
Yeah, you've got quite a lot coming up on the show in the next few weeks, haven't
you?
Yes.
So I've got a few authors coming up, so very excited.
Yeah.
Make sure you
tune in for those, because these are big names and we're not going to tell you who, but tune in.
Yes. Yeah, we've got some big names.
Heavy hitters coming on to Books and Beyond.
A coup. Yeah, so keep listening and you'll find out more about that. So look, just wanted to say to our listeners, thanks for tuning in today, and take care and be kind to yourselves. We will put our book list on our blog, so you'll be able to find that. But big books today, and lots to think about. A lovely mirror and doorway into our society. So thanks once again, and haere rā, ka kite anō.